I have a memory that I'd like to jog for you. I've been thinking about this week.
Okay. I like my memory being jogged. I'm into it.
This is one of my favorite times that I can remember us being like kind of mortified by something together.
Oh, okay. I don't know where this is going, but I'm excited.
And I think it like really reveals a lot about like the way that we were as friends when we were children. Anyway, okay, enough stalling. So do you remember in fifth grade, we had a music teacher named Miss Beth, and...
Yeah, I mean, it was like the kind of last name that is not great for children to have to pronounce. Yes, I do recall.
It was maybe at the end of the year or something. There was like this big performance that we had to do. And it was a play that I think she wrote, or I don't know, but it was called The Three Javelinas. And it was...
Okay, it was The Three Javelinas. She didn't write it. It was a book, but it was like basically like...
It was The Three Little
Latino,
Pigs.
Latino, yes. Like Latinx version of The Three Little Pigs.
And we... had to make hats for our performance.
Oh my God. This is so good. Sorry. I'm so hyped. Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. They tried to do this, like, we're in grade school. So like, you don't have subjects, but you have like, you take like art and gym and music. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they like tried to do basically like a mashup with all the teachers. And so we like, Miss Beth was our music teacher, and so, like, she was leading this whole thing, but I think somehow, like, phys ed was involved. Maybe there's some sort of choreography. I don't know. And then we had to, like, quote-unquote, to make costumes, we had to make these hats, and they gave us, like, these, they're, like, white, disposable-ish, like, painter's hats, and you had to, like, make them, like, everybody basically had to, like, put ears on them and stuff, and, like,
make it look like a little pig hat, like, and then yeah, we were like, all supposed to be pigs then.
Right, and we were in fifth grade, so we're at the age where, like, doing shit like that, it's like, you're about to go to, like, the middle school, you're like, this isn't cool, and this is, honestly, this is one of the more... like thug moments of my parents. Like I was just like, I'm obsessed with my parents, but this was really a time that I was really thankful for them that you came over. And first of all, what was,
we had two performances though. We have to mention that like there was one performance.
We did one at school.
At school.
And like during the day for the rest of the school. And then we had to do one at night as like a recital kind of thing that your parents came to.
But before the recital, we did this other thing. You want to tell them?
Okay. So we had done the one during the school day. And then what happened was we had to do this one like at night, and you came over to my house because you were always at my house. Mm-hmm. God bless. And we asked my dad if we could light our hats on fire. And on my dad grill. Was like, yeah. Sure. Like you guys can burn these on the grill. And so my dad like lit the grill for us and let us burn these hats. And then we went to our performance and our music teacher was like, girls, where are your hats? And I would never have just been like told her the truth. But you were like, we lit them on fire, like at Austin's house. Like we burned them on her parents' grill. And she was just like,
okay.
And I remember just standing there being like, I don't know how to like admit to my part in this, but like, I can't deny that what she just said is the truth. Oh my God. I haven't thought about this in so long. And I love that my parents were just like, yeah, you can burn this shit. You also need to know that like everyone had different roles. And like some people had to be like animals. And like some people had to like physically like use their body as like part of the house. It was very weird.
And I didn't want to be part of the choreography. And so I volunteered to play the xylophone. And because I was someone.
We both played the xylophone.
Because, and maybe this is true for you too, but like. I remember there being something about like because I took music lessons outside of school, they like let me play the xylophone instead of doing the choreography.
I thought we had to take like a test, like you had to compete to get one of the xylophone spots.
It was coveted. You're right. Well, probably because nobody wanted to do the goddamn choreography.
Fucking build a house with their arms. Like what the F?
Yeah, we were too old for that.
It was 100% something they should have done with the second graders. And then like, It was a not understanding a level of maturity mm-hmm. that like fifth graders actually do possess and then making them feel wildly embarrassed.
Yep.
Then they engage in pyrotechnics. So also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
Welcome. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, whatever we're noodling on at any given time in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan in Los Angeles.
And that is Austin Williams in Chicago. Thank you for your help with that anecdote.
Oh my God. I thank you for bringing it up just like as a thing. I am thrilled to have had the opportunity to remember that shit show.
That was truly so embarrassing to be a part of. And I
mean, like, wildly embarrassing. And then also, like, at the same time, it made me think of like another time that we were just like doing something, I don't know, outside of the norm or whatever. And you like called us like a spade, or we were just like whatever to these teachers. So mm-hmm. one time we were working on, we had to do like fake interviews for this, like for the gifted program.
And
cycle back on that shit. But Jamie had written this really funny script where was interviewing the queen of Transylvania, whose name was Ivana Moratz. And I obviously played Ivana Moratz.
Yep.
And to make this short film, we're like in the girls' bathroom and I'm wearing like this a black like cloak with like full floor length cloak over my clothes and with like a hood. And Jamie is using like black eyeshadow to make me look like real sallow around the eyes. Mm. And our guidance counselor, who's been out, mind you, for 3 months on maternity leave, is like rolling in all like, you know, bubbly and fresh new mom faced or whatever. And she pops into the bathroom to like, I don't know, check her hair before she like enters her office. You know, she's in that like, I'm coming back. Is everyone happy to see me? Mm-hmm. Like kind of vibe. And then what transpires is she goes, oh girls, is this how you dress now? And Jamie just looks at her deadpan and goes, yes, Mrs. Bowsey, this is how we dress now. But the problem with it was, is I was the only person dressed like that. Like you weren't, like, and you looked normal, and I was just like,
I was like applying dark shadow to below your eye. Mm-hmm. So I was involved, but no, I was not dressed like that.
And it was like the era where I could have just been like a really engrossed, like, you know, Good Charlotte fan or something who like thought they were really doing it in fifth grade, you know?
This was right around when kind of like Linkin Park was coming out. Hot Topic was really popping. I feel like Linkin Park's older than
that. I feel like this was like the edge of like pop punk. Like it was like Good Charlotte. It was like Simple Plan. It was like Yellow Card.
Yeah. It was a dark time for music, but that's all right.
It was a dark time for music. That's what we're going to say about it, you know? Ocean Avenue, looking at you. Anyway.
Wow. And that violin, that endless violining. Anyway.
That fucking electric violin. I'm sorry. Honestly.
Wait, that was a thing in the early 2000s.
Unpopular opinion.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say it. When people play like electric string instruments that aren't guitars in pop music, I don't like it and get embarrassed by it.
Me too. I would say that's I experienced secondhand embarrassment. So without further ado, we should probably like go ahead and name the topic.
Yeah, guys, welcome to a fup date. We're here to fup date you up about some embarrassment, as a matter of fact. Yeah. We actually are talking about being embarrassed this go round.
I know. This was a fitting cold open. And I don't know, this felt like a timely topic, sort of, because in anticipation of like reintegrating to like being with other people in society,
not knowing what social norms are, go on.
Exactly. I'm having like a lot of stress feelings about being like unsure about mm-hmm. social norms. Everything feels like a new environment all of a sudden. And the article that we are gonna wanna talk about in a couple moments here is an article that I found a few years ago, during the first time that I lived in California, when I was experiencing like a lot of chronic embarrassment. And I think it was just, I find that like times when I'm kind of like a fish out of water situation, sure. where I mm-hmm. don't necessarily know all of the people and how they're gonna like react. I don't have a good like social lay of the land. I become mm-hmm. embarrassed like incredibly easy. And
dude, that's real.
In trying to figure that out, I found this article that I sent to you. But before we talk about that, do you find yourself like easily embarrassed, or like you find you have certain kinds of embarrassment?
No, you know, it's interesting because I'm a talker and a loud person, and honestly, I like attention. But I remember, and I don't know, I like wonder if this was like a hormonal thing. I wonder if this was like the onset of like my depression vibes as a young person. But I remember really distinctly, I'm just always someone, and you grew up with me, like, I'm not afraid to talk in class. I'm not afraid to be right. I'm not afraid to be wrong. I'm just like, that I was very much like a talker in school, like I'm a talker in life. And I remember my junior year of high school. Confidently verbose. Thank you. I'll take that. My junior year of high school, I was in, like, it was the beginning of a semester, so it was a teacher I hadn't had before. And I remember she posed some kind of question that was, like, very, it was very, like, it wasn't, like, a right or wrong question. It was just, like, what do you know about this? Mm-hmm. Like, she was getting a thermometer read from people. And, you know, somebody had talked and been like, well, like, I've heard X, Y, and Z. And this is, like, a U.S. history class. And I raised my hand, and it was the first time I've ever really experienced this, but I felt my face get red. And then I had this whole weird moment that I was like, oh my God, I'm not embarrassed. Why is this physically happening to me? And then I was like, oh no, now I'm embarrassed because I think she thinks I'm embarrassed, but like, I love talking. Mm-hmm. So I think like at times I feel embarrassment, like I feel betrayed by my body, like physically, in a way that doesn't line up with like mental embarrassment.
Sure.
And I feel like I get secondhand embarrassment more than I get firsthand embarrassment, which is, I don't know that that's a great quality. But I think sometimes I'm like embarrassed when somebody I'm like with is like wiling out more than I get embarrassed by my own behavior.
Interesting. Do you find I get a lot of secondhand embarrassment as well, but like definitely a healthy dose of firsthand?
I mean, I don't not have firsthand embarrassment. Don't get it twisted.
No, I'm not. But what I want to ask is, do you think that when you get secondhand embarrassment, does it, is it dependent on anything? Like for me, I feel like I get secondhand embarrassment when I witness someone doing something that I think is embarrassing, but they are not embarrassed about. Like if they're embarrassed themselves, I don't get secondhand embarrassment.
Yeah, 100%. I don't get secondhand embarrassment when like they're not, like when they are embarrassed.
It's like someone has to be embarrassed.
Yeah, I feel like the times that like I feel embarrassed because of like the actions of another person are like if that person to me is creating somewhat of a scene and I feel like people are looking at us, then I get embarrassed that we're being looked at. So maybe that's not necessarily secondhand.
That's kind like of firsthand.
Okay, maybe I've written that off as secondhand. I think a lot of times I'll have moments where I'm embarrassed to be a part of a group that might seem like they're creating a scene. That makes me feel embarrassed.
What about if you see someone doing something that you find embarrassing on TV? So you're not physically there and you're not in a group with them.
I don't know that that makes me feel embarrassed, but it makes me feel cringy.
Okay, yeah. And maybe that's...
Like, example, my favorite reality television vibes these days, The Bachelor, behind. I mean, when they make people get serenaded, I want to crawl out of my skin.
Do you fast forward?
I oftentimes will be like, I like watch through my hands.
Like you don't have to movie. That's really funny.
I know I'm not like I don't want to miss if something juicy happens, okay. But like I'm not like embarrassed, I'm just like uncomfortable, I guess. Okay, here's another version of that maybe too though. When you have you ever seen like someone get like publicly engaged? I'm like, I don't get joyful about that, I get uncomfortable.
I
don't want to be as a stranger a part of your proposal. Like, I'm fine.
Yeah, I didn't ask to be a part of this. Happy for you, I guess.
Life moment you're having.
I also wouldn't like want to do that publicly. Like if I were a person participating.
I think that's why it makes me embarrassed.
Yes, because we are then both like judging the other person's experience of getting engaged publicly based on how we would feel about it.
Right.
And so we're like projecting our embarrassment.
Kill me.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about like if you are like lauded or like receive accolades like in front of peers?
That's a good question.
I really struggle with that. It's very hard for me to absorb and sometimes I cry a little. Because it just feels uncomfortable and then my body cries, speaking of a body betrayal.
Yeah. No, 100%. That's that physical reaction that you're like, I no longer have control over my body. I don't think when I get like an atta girl, like in public, that makes me uncomfortable. But I have had moments where I've felt like pressured to like deliver on something in a way that's elevated that has made me feel like crying.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Not like, and I don't mean like pressured to like do something I'm not qualified to do, but like, to be the, like, to be asked to be, like, the representative for something, that makes me uncomfortable.
Okay, yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
We've decided you're speaking for the group. I don't like doing that.
Yeah, and that feels kind of like the inverse of you being embarrassed when someone else in the group is representing you. I think that there's, like, mm-hmm. maybe some responsibility feelings in there that are tied to but slightly separate from embarrassment.
No, I think that's a good way to put it, for sure. Interesting.
So without further ado, I think we should talk a little bit about this Berkeley News article from Throwback 2011. That's all right. It's
2011,
so relevant.
You guys.
It's called Easily Embarrassed: Study Finds People Will Trust You More by
dun, dun, dun.
by Yasmin Anwar. And I hope that I'm saying that right, but, you know, we do our best.
I think you nailed it, actually.
Thank you. So I'm not going to like read this whole thing, but I did want to summarize the findings of the studies that they discuss in here.
Totally.
So in this article, they tell us that a new study, new in 2011, from the University of California, Berkeley, suggests that people who are easily embarrassed are also more trustworthy and more generous. And I would have thought the opposite, because I would have thought that embarrassment indicated like maybe some ego problems and like really right. not wanting to be wrong. I would have made assumptions right. about that. But they tell us that embarrassment is one emotional signature of a person whom you can entrust valuable resources. It's part of the social glue. So embarrassment is part of the social glue that fosters trust and cooperation in everyday life. That's from social psychologist Rob Willer. So
thank you for coming to the program, Rob.
So they go on to talk about like how embarrassment is a sign of virtue and like just some thoughts on that. But the actual research that was done is what I want to talk about. So,
okay.
In the first experiment, they had 60 college students who were videotaped recounting. So like not the actual moment, but they're telling a story of like a time when they were embarrassed in public. So like moments such as public flatulence or making incorrect assumptions based on appearances. For example,
it was so funny the examples they gave, because they're basically like, tell us a story about a time you farted in public or you thought a fat woman was pregnant. That's essentially,
or that you thought they got a lot of stories about when someone thought a disheveled person was a homeless person asking for money.
I mean, I was like, who's like experiencing someone that they're like, you're a little disheveled. I assume that you're panhandling.
Well, someone I think thought that Maddie and I were homeless in our near our building when we were taking the dog out, like not that long ago. So we were coming around from like the back parking lot, like rather than through like the main entrance, just because like the dog had run that way. And
this actually makes sense. I had a customer back in the heyday who used to come in all the time with his dog. And he was telling me about how a lot of people thought he was homeless. And he goes, no, I just like walk my dog a lot.
So we were going to do laundry, like after the dog shit, we were going to put a load of laundry in. And so Maddie had like a big bag full of clothes over her arm. And we were in like sweats and mismatched coats because it was like when California was 40 degrees, like around Christmas. And we're coming.
Yeah, we were just vibing.
Yeah. And we were like, okay, we'll just go down real quick. And we come around the corner to the front of the building. And one of our neighbors who, like, we don't really know sees us and, like, is walking in and then comes back and just, like, waits and stands there and watches us in, like, that way that men do when they're, like, trying to intimidate you and, like, make sure you don't, like, come in somewhere. Like, I'm sure you've seen men, like, stand threateningly, like, if a homeless person is nearby. I've seen this happen a lot of times.
Many times.
And it was that, and that was really weird and uncomfortable. And Maddie was like, what the fuck? And I was like, I think that he thinks we're homeless. I think that, like, we came around from where the trash is with
that,
a bag.
It does make sense.
With our dog in mismatched coats because we just came outside for a second, and he doesn't know who we are. And I think he thinks that we're going to try to dig through the trash, so that's what it is. Anyway, that is embarrassing for him, but he was drunk and doesn't remember, and that's all right.
That's it and that's all.
So back to stories of people doing what he did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, back to people who were living this way, like this man who should be embarrassed. Go on.
So, you know, the 60 college students are retelling these stories, and the research assistants coded each video testimonial based on the level of embarrassment that the subject showed. Mm-hmm. They also had the students participate in something called the dictator game, which I had never heard of.
Right.
And basically, it measures altruism. And what they did was they gave 10 raffle tickets to each participant and asked them to keep some tickets for themselves and give the rest of the tickets to a partner. And the results, when they compared the dictator game to the embarrassment videos, the results showed that the participants who had shown greater levels of embarrassment tended to give away more of their raffle tickets, which would indicate...
Which I thought was very interesting. Like, this, reading this study, I was like, okay, like, I don't know. Because a lot of this, too, like, in terms of who's the most embarrassed, feels like a little subjective.
And I almost feel like that's kind of, I'm like, is that altruistic or is it like a pick me thing? Are these like the people who like are maybe socially like the neediest?
I mean, they know they're being observed. So that's it's like, true. Let me show you how clean benevolent cut I am. Yeah. I kept one ticket and gave nine away. Like, I don't know. I just questioned the motivations because maybe, I don't know, maybe I don't trust people. Okay.
So do I. And they also did some research with some people from Craigslist and found like some similar findings.
Okay.
Although that experiment was not as interesting, so I'm not going to talk about it.
So who cares?
Who cares? Anyway, the conclusion is that time and time again, the results showed that embarrassment signals people's tendency to be pro-social. Leading people to want to affiliate with them more and ultimately making the other members of the group feel more comfortable trusting that person. So there's like a cue that says like, oh, this person's like really, really heavily embarrassed about this thing that's not that big of a deal. They are a more likable, perhaps trustworthy person.
Okay, what I want to know is, do you feel like that's played out in your own life? Because one of the things I will say is that there is a tipping point, I think, for me somewhere in here. And particularly, I, you know, talked about feeling betrayed by my body and having like a physical response that didn't match my emotions. But I also, like, I used to work with this woman years ago who she just, you know, she had the pigmentation and like just the physiological response that she would get very red in the face, like about all sorts of things. Yeah. And I just, you know, she would tell you a story about something that happened and she would be like blushing profusely. Mm-hmm. And I did do like a little goog on this when we were looking, you know, at the article talking about embarrassment. Cause I was thinking so much about like facial redness because I'm like, I hate it when it happens to me.
I hate it too.
But well, so natural reaction to a perceived threat, it's, you know, basically like the blood vessels in your face get wide and it increases, you know, the blood flow to your skin, which is how you end up like having the redness and blushing. And so it can be like a thing for threat, but it's also something that's triggered just when people have like a powerful onset of emotions. So it could be like stress, shame, or embarrassment. And that all makes sense to me. But like when she would get really embarrassed about something, get red in the face, as like a colleague, it stressed me out when she looked visibly embarrassed at work. I would be like, please, like, don't look so flustered, which is like a shitty reaction to have. And it didn't have anything to do with trust, but I didn't want people to perceive her as weak.
Yeah. Okay. So that's definitely part of it, being like concerned for like how she would appear to others. I also think
we
that,
were
like,
customer facing. I was like, don't let this bitch take advantage of you. And I don't want her to think she's getting one over on you just because your face always gets red. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
I feel like I was a little protective of her.
Okay. Then, and I think that this is a sliding scale because I wanted to, when you said like, there's a tipping point, I'm thinking of like, okay, yes, like there is some like healthy embarrassment that like is pro-social and like everyone can kind of laugh together. And the person typically overcomes that embarrassment pretty quickly and is able to laugh about it, perhaps. And they, in the article, call out like the typical embarrassment gesture, which a man does demonstrate in the article. Maybe we could post that.
It's a funny photo. We'll use it. Okay.
Is the typical embarrassment gesture is gazing downward to one side while partially covering the face and either smirking or grimacing.
One of the things I like that they pointed out is that, like, the partial face cover is embarrassment, but when people are like feeling shame, mm-hmm. they'll cover their face completely with both hands. And I was
and
like,
this is what I want to talk about is the tipping okay. point where embarrassment goes from being like healthy and something that like we see as a positive in other people mm-hmm. to flipping over and being something that's uncomfortable to witness and is like a shame response. So like the difference between being able to like kind of like look at and admit what you've done versus like the full covering
look
of the face
done.
Not being able to admit like when people do something embarrassing but then like say that it didn't happen, like that's a shame response. They're like
yes
they're
like
refusing.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's shame.
Exactly. So they're like refusing to feel the embarrassment response like publicly, and so like that
right.
puts distance between us and them, I think, because it's emotionally closed off and it's
right.
It's dishonest.
Expressing embarrassment is vulnerable, but it also suggests that you have some level of a moral compass mm-hmm. or like some sort of, and also maybe even that you have boundaries, like depending mm-hmm. on what the scenario is, that something has happened that's made you uncomfortable and you're expressing it.
Well, in some ways it's a display of empathy, I think, because in order to be embarrassed, you have to be aware of other people's perceptions of what's happening.
Like 100%.
If you ask someone like when their baby is due and they're not pregnant, you have to be aware.
Let's just like y'all stop. Probably don't ask anyone probably about stop perceived anything.
Doing that because also even if they are pregnant, like you don't know what's going on with that. And anyway, it's just refrain.
I have a firm rule that you shouldn't comment on people's appearance if it's anything that they didn't make that choice today.
Yes.
So like, you can tell someone you like their shoes because they picked those out today. But like you don't make comments on like, are you pregnant? Like weight gain, weight loss, hair thinning, any of it. You only comment on things that they could have made a choice about in the last 24 hours.
Yeah. And like, I'd like to underline like weight loss. Like, I think that a lot of people like finally know that like you shouldn't comment about weight gain, but also like don't comment about weight loss because you don't know why that's like, happening.
Well, I remember times that like, I had lost weight because of like extreme stress or whatever. And I had like clients at like a job be like, oh my God, you've lost weight. You look great. And it's like, I'm miserable. Don't say shit
right,
like that. This
right.
is like unhealthy.
People telling me that
I
look amazing when
about,
I'm like in the throes of like an ulcerative colitis meltdown.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, don't come for me. I'm wildly depressed right now.
And I'm like, you have a bad thermometer of what looks good.
I mean, honestly, but you know, we live in a society that's glorified thinness. So here we all are. And that, I mean, truly a whole nother episode, but you know, just
another episode,
this little soapbox moment,
but
don't talk about it.
What I was actually trying to say is that I think that what this study kind of ultimately is saying is that like by displaying embarrassment for like calling something out about someone accidentally or like
right.
farting in public, like you're aware that like other people heard you fart and have to smell it, and like so you're embarrassed. It shows that you're not like living in a fully isolated world by yourself,
that you like don't care. Right.
Yeah, you're like thinking about how it's happening for other people too.
It makes a difference.
It does. And I don't know, it makes me feel better about like being embarrassed, but it also makes me like more aware of like shame reactions that I have. I think when I read this, like the first time, I was like sorting out a lot of things in my mid-20s, as one does. And
as one does,
this brief article really helped me differentiate between shame and embarrassment because I couldn't.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't like see them as different, I don't think. And I was experiencing so much chronic embarrassment that I think actually was more like shame triggers popping up over and over, because if I describe the feeling as like, was it a half face cover or a full face cover? Like it was probably full face. And so I think it's just interesting to kind of differentiate and figure out like where the line of like something becoming toxic, shameful, and like too much about you, and like really, I don't know, like shame makes people seem like more selfish, whereas embarrassment makes them seem more empathetic.
Yes, 100%. And I kind of think that the seams of those are like also accurate. Like mm-hmm. shame is a little bit more selfish and embarrassment is a little bit, you know, more pro-social, more empathetic. I guess one of the things I wanted to just like circle in and ask you on this. So one of my favorite just like facts in life as someone who has what an older generation might refer to as a potty mouth.
Sure.
You know, why not? People statistically trust people who swear more mm-hmm. because they think that we're
yeah.
more honest. And I would argue that that's fucking true. But it's interesting because we're putting this like trust of also statistically, like people trust people more who are easily embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the swearing one and actually feel like I really believe that. I'm not sure if I feel like I trust people more who are embarrassed or if it's like honestly like net neutral. Do you feel like you trust people who have greater propensity for embarrassment more, like consciously in any way?
Maybe. I think because it's just a sign of humility. Like I think one of my least favorite characteristics in a person is like the inability to admit like when you've done something wrong or the inability to laugh at yourself. Like it's very right. hard to be around or work with people like that or have friendships with
them. Who take themselves too seriously.
Yeah. And so that's like really unpalatable to me. But something that I want to call out about the like trustworthiness and swearing thing is I can see why people would make that association because someone who swears a lot seemingly doesn't have like an intense filter. Like they're perhaps not like performatively speaking, but also maybe they are. And I also, but yeah, I want to say that I think that this is maybe something that will change a little bit over time because I think that there's like some like toxic masculinity stuff in that where like the person isn't more trustworthy. Like we see them as more honest because they're like saying whatever they want. But I think right. that like with our previous president, we saw someone who aggressively says whatever they want, has no filter. People think he's trustworthy because of that. But he's just spouting lies and whatever he wants to say. I don't think that like the lack of a filter makes someone trustworthy. Even if they're saying things that they think are true, like that person is perhaps like just aggressive and controlling. I don't know. So mixed feelings about that. And I'm curious, like generationally, if our feelings about like swearing equaling trustworthiness will change. Because it's so one dimensional to assume that like just because someone uses a lot of swear words, that's a big jump to make. That they're also.
Well, and I don't think it's conscious. You know what I mean?
No, but, like, yeah, it's definitely not.
It's not. And so I feel like then hearing it like as a stat, I'm like, yes, like I feel like this is accurate. Mm-hmm. Hearing the stat about like I trust people who are embarrassed more easily. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if that feels as like obviously this rings true for me kind of thing.
Well, maybe is it a good way to look out for a sociopath? You know, I wonder if people who don't feel empathy, if they feel embarrassment or maybe it just goes straight to a shame response.
Well, maybe some of it is to your point of like trying to nail down the difference between embarrassment and shame and, you know, also the versions of it that like, are you being perceived as weak or a pushover or anything like that? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that sometimes I worry about, I think maybe what it says.
Oh my God.
Is
did
like,
you have secondhand shame for that woman?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on. Sorry.
I think probably like, I just wished I could get her to stop doing that for like everyone's sake, which is shitty. But I just was like, I think I feel uncomfortable and weird when people have like really, when people blush like a lot when they're talking and I just like want to relieve them of that burden.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand.
And
about,
I'm
like,
worried about how other people are perceiving them, you know?
No, I do too.
But I think maybe some of this, like the takeaway is like how maybe I need to do a better job of distinguishing the difference between embarrassment and shame and other things, you know?
Yeah, no, me too. And the secondhand embarrassment versus secondhand shame, because until truly that moment when I interrupted you, I had not thought of the fact that shame could be secondhand, but it totally can.
It totally can. And I don't know if that's shitty or not. I don't know if it was shame. It's just like, I was just like, oh, I just didn't want it to be happening.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And then you're like thinking about all the other people who have like the guest experience. And it's, that's why I hated just, training honestly, people. I was worried in the
service
she was going
to be taken advantage of, or people thought she was a pushover. And I was like, she's not. She just gets red. I'm like, she's great, but her face looks like she's out of control.
Oh, that sucks. That is such a betrayal.
I feel for it. I don't want to be red in the face. I get it.
So I guess like the takeaway of this is like, if you want people to like you more, feign embarrassment when you receive accolades by looking down slightly to the side and covering the corner of your mouth and grimacing a little.
That's very George Clooney on early seasons of ER, and it was very sexy.
I was going to say, did it not work?
I was sexually attracted to it, for sure.
Yeah.
Continue to be.
It's likable, approachable.
That's right. Hmm. Shout out to you, Doug Green. That was his character. Oh, come for me.
Wow.
Early ER fans.
I had no idea.
He's no, it wasn't. It was Mark Green and Doug. Wait, no. Anthony Edwards played Mark Green. And George Clooney played Doug something. Now I don't know what his last name is. God damn it. I'm going to have to go into the archives. Guys, it's a great television show. That's all.
Well, to not to interrupt you about ER, but like to just now, in light of discussing this, I'd like to circle back on our earlier conversation about the three javelinas and ask if were we embarrassed or were we ashamed of ourselves?
I was... I think I experienced both in this.
I think narrative. I did too.
I honestly think I felt like shame about being forced to wear the hat.
Yeah.
And then I think I felt a little embarrassed telling them that we had lit them on fire. Well, when you told them we had lit them on fire.
I didn't feel that. I don't know. Something was up with me in elementary, middle, and high school.
Oh,
that,
you like, didn't give a fuck.
I think it's just because it's when you get in trouble in elementary school, like it's so non-consequential. Like as an adult, like I don't really want to spend time in jail or like
well,
be fine
I would push back
for something.
You a little bit, like just a little bit, is like the times that you actually did get in trouble, and you've told the story about like fully crying in the hallway, like when you're
gonna, oh my god, I worked my privilege so hard.
But I was gonna say, I think you didn't give a fuck, not because you didn't care about getting in trouble. I actually think you cared a lot about getting in trouble in grade school. Mm. You just knew the likelihood of you actually getting in trouble was pretty low.
That is it, and I think it felt powerful to toe that line.
Of course.
And that's a topic for another time.
Truly, that's a whole other episode. Well, on that note of other episodes and things to come, as always, you can find us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And I don't know, let us know the things you're noodling on and about your embarrassment or shame, should you feel so inclined. We'll see you on Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.